Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, jetzt in ein neues Jahr mit dir zusammen und dem Podcast zu starten. Und auch dieses Jahr werden wieder ganz viele tolle Interviewgäste auf dich warten. Es wird ganz viele inspirierende Themen geben und ich bin schon voller Vorfreude auf alles, was hier auf uns warten wird. Und an dieser Stelle auch einmal von Herzen Dankeschön für die über 5000 positive Bewertungen hier auf iTunes. Es ist unfassbar und es berührt mich sehr, wirklich sehr, sehr, dass ihr mir da schreibt und ihr mir eure Bewertungen da lasst. Und es ist einfach ja sehr berührend und es beflügelt mich und es motiviert mich wahnsinnig. Also danke von Herzen dafür. Vielen, vielen, vielen Dank. Und ja, wir starten heute in das neue Jahr mit einem Interview mit Ryder Carroll. Vielleicht hast du schon mal von ihm gehört. Er ist der Gründer von der Bullet Journal Method. Das ist eine ganz bestimmte Methode, um Notizbuch oder Tagebuch zu schreiben und die unglaublich dabei hilft, fokussiert und sehr klar die eigenen Gedanken zu ordnen, die Gefühle zu ordnen, die Zukunft zu planen, den Tag zu planen, sich selber zu strukturieren und überhaupt einfach anzufangen, Notizbuch oder Tagebuch zu schreiben. Wenn du mich schon länger kennst, weißt du, ich bin davon ein Riesenfan. Ich schreibe seit Jahren Tagebuch, Notizbuch und habe einen Riesenstapel zu Hause. Und ich liebe es einfach, diese Notizbücher durchzugehen. Das ist wirklich wie so eine Schatztruhe an Ideen und Inspiration, wo ich selber immer einfach auch wieder alte Gedanken neu finde. Und deswegen, ich kann es nur von Herzen empfehlen, Tagebuch zu schreiben, Notizbuch zu schreiben. Und auch mit der Hand, nicht auf dem Handy. Es macht einfach einen Unterschied. Und Ryder Carroll hat diese Methode entwickelt. Er ist New York Times Bestseller und ein sehr inspirierender Mensch, der ja in dieser Folge auch ganz viel, in diesem Gespräch ganz viel von seiner eigenen Geschichte erzählt. Erzählt, warum er diese Methode entwickelt hat. Und es ist einfach sehr inspirierend und auch sehr berührend. Und ich bin ihm unglaublich dankbar auch für seine Offenheit in diesem Gespräch und hoffe sehr, dass dich diese Folge auch inspirieren wird. Und falls du auch noch kein Journal hast, kein Tagebuch, kein schönes Notizbuch, wir haben in diesem Jahr unser erstes eigenes Notizbuch rausgebracht, unser eigenes Journal, das Rise Up and Shine Journal, das so schön geworden ist mit wundervollen Illustrationen und mit ganz vielen tollen Ideen, mit tollen Reflexionsfragen und mit ganz viel Platz zum Schreiben, weil das immer eins der Dinge war, die mich an Notizbüchern oft genervt hat, dass da meistens nicht genug Platz ist für die eigenen Gedanken. Und wir haben da sehr lange dran konzipiert und ich habe mir da quasi mein eigenes Lieblingsjournal zusammengestellt und hoffe, dass es dich auch inspiriert. Den Link dazu findest du auf jeden Fall in den Shownotes. Und ja, ich wünsche dir jetzt einfach ganz viel Freude mit dieser Folge, ganz viel Inspiration und ja, viel Spaß. Let's go. Are you ready?
I am.
So I'm so happy and delighted that we have a very special podcast guest today on the show, and it's Ryder Carroll, who is the inventor of the bullet journal method, and I'm really, really happy to have you here. So hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So let us, you are in New York right now, right?
Yes, I'm in Brooklyn.
Awesome. So would you invite us a little bit into your life? Like how, I think it's in the morning right now for you, right?
Yes, it's 10 o'clock.
So how do you start your day? What is your morning ritual?
So usually I get up and I journal for between 5 minutes to half an hour, depending on how much I'm trying to work through. Then I meditate. Then I go to the gym and then I sit down in front of my computer and get to work.
And so this
pretty
was
simple.
This was also this morning what you did?
Yes, it is.
And do you have a special technique for meditation? Like do you use some special meditation technique or do you just sit down and do like your own method?
Well, I cycle through them. Like a big part of my own training, I guess you would be, is to try on different things for size. So for example, I used to meditate before I journaled and I realized that I'd be significantly more distracted. So journaling before I meditate clears my mind. Oh, so that was like a big step in terms of meditation. I've tried many different ones. Currently, I'm working my way through Sam Harris's course. But I'm always looking for different teachers and different approaches. So currently I'm working my way through that. It's a guided course that has both individual sessions as well as overall lessons. And he's a very interesting teacher.
What
so
is
that's
his
been
name?
Interesting for me. Sam Harris.
Okay. I haven't heard about him. That sounds good. I would check it out. Awesome. And when did you start to meditate?
I would say probably 5 or 6 years ago, I started looking into different forms of meditation and went to different schools and different practices to see what would work for me. I mean, I've been trying it on and off for many years, but I think that I didn't get the best guidance as to what to expect. I think I bought into a lot of the narratives of like meditation will like heal you or like make you feel fantastic or, you know, make you focused and clear. You know, I think a lot of my failure with meditation was based on setting an expectation walking in. Right. Okay. And now that I have been doing it and like cultivating my own practice for so many years, like the point is not to set an expectation. And once you let go of that, all of a sudden really interesting things begin to happen.
Yeah, that's so true. And for everyone who may not know you and who has not yet heard about the bullet journal method, can you tell a little bit like who you are, how you came to the bullet journal method? And yeah, maybe we just start, where are you born?
So from the very beginning, I was born in Vienna, Austria. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Austria. And then I went to New York to study for college, New York State. And then I studied both creative writing and graphic design. And then I took those skills and moved to New York to become a graphic designer. At the time, that was more paper-based design, actual tangible design. But I very quickly moved into digital design, so websites and branding and that kind of thing. And over the years, I started getting much more interested in working on more complicated digital design. So I started working on designing products. So actually apps and that kind of thing, ranging from video games to insurance apps. It was for me, it was really interesting to solve puzzles, and I really like designing systems. And about 6 years ago, I released the way that I organize my life with pen and paper through a method that I call the bullet journal method, which a lot of people think is something that I just designed and put out there. But it was actually something that I've been evolving for most of my life. And it started as a response to dealing with my own challenges. When I was very young, I was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. I had a lot of problems at school. And back then, there weren't a lot of tools available to somebody with my condition. It wasn't very well understood yet. So I started coming up with my own little tricks and techniques in order to help me become more productive and focused and organized. And over the decades, I've been refining those techniques and figuring out ways that they can influence each other. And eventually, I came up with this toolkit, all these different techniques that help us become more present and organized. Using nothing more than a notebook and a pen. And that's what is known as the bullet journal method today.
Awesome. I would like to go back a little bit to the moment when you get like diagnosed with, how do you say it in English? Attention disorder?
Deficit disorder.
Deficit disorder. Like how old were you when you got diagnosed with it?
It was sometime in elementary school. I don't know exactly what age it was. I mean, in my case, part of the disorder is that you don't have a very good recollection of dates.
Yeah.
Okay. But I remember it was in elementary school.
And like, so, what did you think about it? Like, did you feel like it, or like, did you think that there is something missing? Or, I mean, because I personally, I'm not sure if it's just sometimes that you were just, that maybe the school was maybe just not the right system where
like, for example, children who are very creative can prosper. So like, how did you feel back then?
I'm sure there's some of that involved, right? And they always talk about learning disabilities. They don't really talk about teaching disabilities, which I feel is also a very critical problem. But yeah, I mean, it was very apparent, you know, when you, my school was elementary through senior year in high school in one, you know, one system, if you will. And that's really interesting for a couple of reasons. One is like when you start going to kindergarten with the same people that you graduate with, you are able to measure yourself over a very long term against the same kind of control group, if you will, right? It's not like you're reintroduced to different people constantly. And when you're very young, when you first start going to school, you're not really doing all that much. You know, there's like a lot of nap time and drawing and like writing letters and everything. But all of a sudden, you know, as you start getting a little bit older, like you start working on real things. You know, you start, math is introduced and vocabulary and those kind of things. And whereas I was once at the same velocity, I guess, or the same level as my peers, like very quickly I started falling behind in a meaningful way. You know, like it just seemed like I couldn't do the things that they could do. And I would, there would be exercises where I'd constantly be the last in the class. You know, I'd constantly be getting in trouble with my teachers to the point where it was hard to debate whether or not there was a problem. I felt there was a problem. My teachers felt there were a problem. My parents felt there was a problem. Like I was struggling in a way that my peers were not. So there was obviously a difference. And the difference when you're that young is not a good thing, right? The last thing you want is to be different from the other people, especially early on when you're developing an identity and forming groups and cliques, you know, like you want to be part of something. But as soon as you're like the stupid one or the one who has to stay after class, you know, it immediately separates you, which for a child is very high, at least for me, it was really anxiety inducing. Like I am different and not in a good way. So we tried to figure out what that difference really meant. You know, there's so many different ways to be different, right? And so the investigation began, like, what is it? What exactly is different about me? And, you know, there were a lot of different doctors involved and different, you know, teaching techniques and all these things. And, you know, is it dyslexia? Is it, you know, there's a host of reasons. And finally just turned out that I have at the time, at least, I had a very hard time focusing or staying focused on things that, I mean, this is kind of reductive, but that I didn't find interesting. It wasn't that I would get bored. Like I literally could not follow the thread. Like I'd be looking at the teacher and I just would not be able to understand what they were saying. It would just go in one ear out the other. And that's kind of terrifying too, because you feel like something is wrong with you in a really meaningful way. Like you're all these people taking notes and you're listening to the same thing and you're just, it's not sticking at all. And so eventually you make a choice. Either you're like, okay, this is just the way that I am, and you know, that's too bad. I'm just gonna have to start getting comfortable, you know, failing constantly and just being that last person, that's it. Or the other option is, what do I do about this? Mm-hmm. And maybe a blessing was that I'm kind of stubborn in that sense. And so I started figuring out little tiny ways in order to be a little bit more productive, a little bit more focused. And I did this on my own terms. So like people were constantly trying to shove things down my throat, like do this way, or here's a system, or here, you know, more homework, more time after school, you know, all these things that it was just more of the thing I wasn't good at. Right. And then some people would argue that that would be a way to help me practice, but it's like you're practice kind of assumes that you have a good starting place, or at least you can begin somewhere. For me, I was just practicing something that I was doing wrong to begin with. So that practice made me worse. So I started figuring out my own techniques. And to be very specific, one thing I started realizing early on is that if I would draw in class when I was listening to a teacher who was talking about something that I was having a hard time following, like all of a sudden I could pay attention. Like magically, like all of a sudden it became so much easier for me to hear what they were saying, because that part of my mind that needed to be distracted was occupied, but not enough so that I couldn't listen. And the thing is that teachers usually don't enjoy it when somebody's drawing in their classroom, right? Because they think they're not paying attention. So I would get in trouble. So I would have to pretend to be paying attention. Every time a teacher wouldn't look at me, I'd go back to drawing so I could actually pay attention. And I realized that this was working for me. But, you know, I was kind of ashamed of it in some sense because the reinforcement was you were doing it wrong. You're not supposed to draw. And so one teacher once realized, like, funny thing about you, Ryder, is that every time I see you drawing, I know you're paying attention, but every time you're looking at me, I know you're not. And she's like, good for you for figuring that out by yourself. And that was a really interesting moment to me because as a child, you're looking to the tall folks for answers, right? If you have a question or concern about something, you ask your parents or your older siblings or your teachers. And in this case, like for the longest time, they were telling me exactly the opposite of what was working for me. So finally, somebody's like, no, it's okay to figure out your own challenges, which is just something that might not occur to you when you're a kid. And all of a sudden, I was like, huh, well, if I can solve this, what else can I solve? And all of a sudden, I realized that it was going to be my responsibility to figure this out. Like, what is life going to be like? And the nice thing was that there are ways to improve it. I just had to kind of take a different path. I had to figure out ways that my mind worked. And sometimes I did that successfully and often I didn't. But over the years, something stuck. And that's what I ended up sharing.
That's amazing. Well, I feel you a lot. Like I felt very similar in school. So I can feel like what you're saying a lot. What would you say, who was the most important influence for you during your childhood? Like who or what helped you the most?
Well, I would definitely have to say my parents in many regards, because my parents are also teachers. They actually taught at the school that I went to. I mean, they taught older classes, so they weren't involved with that, at least professionally, but personally they were. And one thing that was really interesting is that, you know, as I got older, I also realized that my parents had their own challenges in school when they were younger, which had formed them and their opinion about this stuff. So I wasn't raised in a household where it's like you need to get an A and anything other than an A is considered a failure. Like I was raised more along the lines of like, do the best you can. That's it. You know, if it doesn't work out, that's okay. Which is interesting because in some regards, and some people could see that as a way of taking the emphasis out of aspiration, right? It's like, do the best you can. But for me, that was really empowering because all of a sudden the responsibility wasn't getting an A, it was doing the best that I could, and it internalized the goal. Like, I don't know what an A means. I know if I could be doing more. Yeah. So all of a sudden my context shifted and I feel like that changed the way that I felt about things. And also sometimes I'd be really proud of myself for getting like a mediocre grade because for me that was really hard. You know, and I was like, I worked for that mediocre grade, but like, you know, if I got an A on something or didn't get an A on something, no matter how hard I tried, it'd always be a failure. Yeah. Right. So like the effort was always rewarded. And that's something that I've always tried to cultivate in myself. Like I don't set an expectation. I try not to set expectations externally. I try to set them internally. You know, it's like, what can I do? What can I control? What can I do more of? And that was a really big shift for me because I wasn't being compared to others, at least not by my parents. I was being compared to my former self, which as I've become an adult has become incredibly valuable, you know, especially when we live in this world where we're constantly comparing where we are to where others either our age or even younger are, you know, that can be a very damaging game.
Yes.
That can be a very damaging way to compare yourself, but comparing yourself to your younger self or your previous self, that can be very productive. It's a very different gauge.
What would you say to if you would meet the writer who's 10 years old, what would you tell him?
It's a hard question because I feel like I needed a lot of the pain that I experienced in order to shape who I became. Mm. Right. It's people don't evolve when they're necessarily happy. I don't think. I feel like we learn when we have challenges. So I don't know if I would tell them anything. Steer them off course. Maybe don't be as hard on yourself.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, maybe that's the most important thing to tell ourselves, right?
And I think I would tell my 2-minute old self the same thing.
Me too. Be hard on ourselves. And then, I mean, you said that you like started to look for yourself, like what could be a solution? How could you learn to focus better? And I mean, today, as you already said, you developed the bullet journal method. It's the bullet journal method, right? And like, how did you develop it? What brought you there?
Well, I mean, again, it was necessity. Right. So the idea is that I, first of all, understanding that I could solve my own problems, also understanding that it was my responsibility to do that, and then looking for opportunities to make life a little bit easier. That's basically what it is for me. That's what the bullet journal method comes down to, is figuring out how you can study your experience to become more self-aware and learn from both the good and the bad in your life, and figure out how you can apply those learnings into your everyday. You know, a lot of people know the bullet journal method just as a new way to keep lists. For me, lists are the result of other work that's much deeper and richer, which is part of the bullet journal method, just one that isn't as well understood yet, which is part of the reason I wrote the book.
Can you explain, just we don't need to go really deep into it, but can you just explain for everyone who maybe never heard about the bullet journal method, like how it works, or like how you could maybe start with it, or just give like an overview for everyone who hasn't heard yet about it?
Yeah, I would say the shortest version to describe what the bullet journal method is that it's a mindfulness practice that's disguised as a productivity system, and all that you need is pen and paper. So on the one hand, you have the system, and it's a way of organizing your thought on paper using various different techniques. Mm-hmm. The way that the system is structured is that it's modular. So all you need is a blank notebook, not any specific notebook, just any notebook you want. And then essentially what you do is you organize different kinds of information into related groups, or called collections. So you can think of the system as a Lego set where every single piece serves a very specific function. I provide different pieces for people to consider to lay the foundation, you know, how to organize your day, your month, how to organize your content, how to organize things that come up in the future. But that just lays the foundation. So in many ways, it's kind of like, here's an empty house, and then you decorate it with your life. And what that means is that because it's modular, you can add your own functionality. So maybe you're trying to form a new habit, or you're trying to track medication, or all those things. The bullet journal becomes whatever you need it to be. So a lot of the emphasis is put on the user. Like, I'm not going to have your life. So I tried to structure this foundation to basically just have a starting point on which you can build. That's why no bullet journals really look the same, because they become whatever their user needs to be. So some people will be using bullet journaling for school. Some of it will be using it for medicine. Some of it for personal development. It just depends on what you need. And that's possible because of how modular it is, and the fact that you're encouraged to invent your own modules. So that's the system. Then on the other hand, you have a practice which helps you get into the habit of introspection. It's about becoming a lot more mindful about how you're investing your time and energy, but just mindful in general. It helps us take a step back and become less distracted, right? It's not just about keeping longer lists and being more and more busy. It's about actually understanding why you're doing what you're doing. So the practice provides a bunch of different tools that can change the context with which you engage with your day-to-day life.
What would you say is one way how we can invest our energy better? Because I think as well that most of the people are so distracted and are not aware that like their energy is their most precious resource actually they have. So what would you say is there something that you do that helps you to stay more focused and to really invest the energy there where you want it to have?
Well, one thing is to start becoming accountable for how you're investing it. And the easiest way I found that is just simply write it down. You know, in the bullet journal, we write down our thoughts as tasks, events, and notes. And we're not doing that just to create these long to-do lists to burden ourselves with. We do it as a way to keep a record. So we keep our entries very short. And the idea is that over time, you actually just have a map of the things that are potentially going to take your time and energy. And then once you have the record, you can study that record. That's we engage with this with daily reflection, where we don't only capture information, but we look at it and we start asking ourselves, does it matter? Is it vital? What would happen if I never did this ever? You know, just very simple questions that you get used to asking every day. So you continuously curate the things that you're allowing into your life. And that's really a core part of this. It's like, what are you going to allow to become part of your life? Because a lot of times that's your choice. I mean, yes. Think about it this way. Like, to-do lists in some ways can just be a backlog of all the things that you need to do. But the other way you can look at a to-do list is that everything on that list is an experience that's waiting to be born. Right. So to-do lists can be in some ways like a time machine, because there you have a menu of all the different things that will actually shape your future. This will become what your life, this will structure your life. So now you have to start working backwards from there. Like, is that the future that you want? Why are you investing your time and energy in these things if they're not moving you towards something that matters to you or that you think is important? It's not just like pick up shoes, pick up laundry, you know, send this email. Like, are these things helping you move towards or away from where you want to go? And I feel like once you have started having that context, you start approaching them differently, and you're always looking for ways to make your lists much shorter, but at the same time, a lot more powerful. So my practice is always like, it's trying to figure out the least amount of things that you can work on that will have the largest amount of impact.
But I think it's so, I just have to repeat it, because I think it's so valuable what you just said. And it's something that, I mean, we all do to-do lists, right? And we all look at our to-do list now like, oh my God, this is all I have to do. But I think it's so amazing what you just said, that you understand that the to-do list is actually a projection of your future. This is what you're going to do. And to ask yourself, is this what I want my future to be like? And if it's a no, then don't do it, or find another way. And if it's a yes, like, mm-hmm. Hell yes, then do it. And I think it's so, so valuable to just see that what you're writing down is actually what will shape your next day, your next week, your next month, and to be what you just said, accountable of your own time and what you want to create in your life. I think it's so, it was just like a thought that really clicked in my mind. I think it's so valuable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, one way you can think about it is when you look at your to-do list, you can ask yourself, like, do I have to do this or do I get to do this? Mm. Right. I mean, it's reductive in one sense, but it's like, well, maybe you have to do this thing that you're not really excited about, but you're doing it because of the thing that it's moving you towards. And then all of a sudden it doesn't seem so much like a chore. It seems like an opportunity. It's like, okay, I have to fill out like all this terrible paperwork and application process to then be able to do this. Like, I get to do this. I get to apply for, and I don't know, a job or, you know, school or something like that. And it takes the emphasis off. But if you can't figure out why you're doing something, then that should be an alarm bell.
Yes.
I was going to say that's an alarm bell that I don't think we pay attention to enough. I think we just let go on autopilot and automatically accept too many things into our life.
Did you like, was it important for you to also to learn to say no to things?
Yes.
Would you say that the bullet method journal helped you like to be more clear on what to say yes and on what to say no?
Yes. I mean, I won't say that there is no silver bullet to making poor decisions, right? But I feel like it's reduced the amount of poor choices that I've made significantly because I'm studying the past, right? I'm like, okay, ooh, I've had a similar opportunity before. Was it worth it? You know, like, well, not really. Or last time, you know, if I just done this, it would have been much better. So now I can make different decisions moving forward. But often I say no to a lot, certainly.
I also think it's so important to say no more often, like to things that actually are not in alignment with what we want to create.
Mm-hmm. It's a difficult balance because on the one hand, you want to expose yourself to things that are out of your comfort zone, right? I feel like that's really important and critical. There's a difference between I don't want to do it and that seems, you know, like I don't know about that. It seems scary, right? So the balance is saying no to the things that you really don't feel would add value, you know, and then saying no to things that would add moderate value. But figuring out if you're saying no because you understand that or because you're scared.
Yeah.
And if you understand that you're scared, that's much more interesting because I feel like that's actually, that can be a growth opportunity.
Yeah. What would you say are your like top three values in your life?
Top three, I think. The first one is to be useful. I think would be one of mine. I'd have to think about the other two. I try to reduce things down as much as possible. So I would say for me, the most important thing is to be useful and to learn, to always be learning. That's really important to me. And to stay open, right? To remember that I really don't know as much as I think I may, which I think is just part of learning.
I like that.
Off the top of my head. Those are the things I can think of.
Do you actually like reread your notebooks?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Amount of time, or do you just pick one up and just read through it?
Okay, so one's like nostalgia based, the other one's really tactical. Those are the two different reasons. I would say that very rarely do I read through for nostalgia, but on a very technical level, you know, until I started focusing on Bullet Journal full time, I was a product designer. So when I started designing some kind of app or whatnot, I'd always start thinking on paper first. It's just easier. I don't have to learn anything. There's no barriers. It just allowed me freedom. And with any kind of app, I guess with almost any endeavor, there are so many different ways to solve a challenge, right? You come up with so many different solutions and the client may or may not pick the solution you think is the best, no matter how much reason you put into the matter. So a lot of the times in my career, I would have to solve the same or similar challenges over and over again. And because I had a record of this, of all my different solutions, I could actually go back into, you know, 2014, you know, August, I worked on Acme Co's website and they needed exactly the same kind of, they needed to solve the same challenge. Like, what were the ideas that I had? So I don't have to start from scratch every single time. Or, you know, so on a professional level, what's really nice is you have a record of your problem solving or your challenges, or maybe all of a sudden you work with a client and things didn't work out for whatever reason. And then a year later, that client may come back up, right? They're like, they come back to you. Now, all of a sudden you have a record of the things that you tried, the things that didn't work. Who were the people you were talking to? Who should you have been talking to? Cause you're keeping a record of all these things, right? So all of a sudden you don't have to guess. You have a reference of information that you can utilize to make choices going forward. So that's how I'll re-engage. And then once in a while, also, if I experience something very challenging in my life, you know, and that may come up, I will pick up that book and read it again to make sure that my memory and the event line up properly. You know what I mean? A lot of times we tell ourselves stories that aren't true. Like it's easier for your mind to start developing some kind of narrative that wasn't in fact how things unfolded. you know, so like maybe you lost your job and like, you know, oh, if I just like not lost that job, all these things would have worked out. And then you look back and you're like, wow, I really hated working there. Yeah. You know, like it all of a sudden balances out, you know, your mind. A lot of us tend to have a more negative perspective of how things were. In general, you know, like our minds are programmed to find the dangers in our lives. And that makes us have a negativity bias, if you will.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times studying your notebooks can help you correct that a little bit, bring a little bit more balance in. Like, for example, I was just reading recently that children who were diagnosed as depressive are asked to keep a journal. I'm not saying bullet journaling, but just journaling in general, to write down their feelings throughout the day, like, how are you doing, this kind of thing. And oftentimes at the end of the day, somebody will ask the child, how are you doing? And the child will usually say, not good. Like, really hate school and they have people I'm there with and everything. And then they would read their journal and then like, it wasn't anywhere near as close to their perception of what happened. Right. So the reality and the perception were really different. And it's one approach that I read about that they're using to help, you know, change the context and the narrative that those kids are telling themselves, like, oh, you know, this kid was nice to me today. I really enjoyed this exercise or thing that we were working on in school. So that's just like one of many examples of how I feel like journaling can keep our dialogue with life a little bit more positive and constructive.
Definitely. I mean, I write my journal since I think 15 years maybe now. And I learned one thing from my boyfriend, which I think is amazing. It's called, he called it the reverse to-do list. So what he does is he's not writing like what he has to do, but what he did. And which is also really nice, because then you read through all the things you did actually, and this makes you feel really good, because we usually forget all the things that we accomplished and we don't look back and say, wow, that was amazing. We just keep on going. But I think it's so helpful to also appreciate all the things you did and not only be like, okay, what do I want to do in the future, but also to be like, hey, what are all the things I accomplished that day or that week or that month?
Absolutely. It's a very powerful practice. It's a big part of bullet journaling as well. We use it in our monthly log where we write down the things that we've actually done on each day. So yeah, we actually have a timeline showing us our progress. I like the reverse to-do list. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
The two-point list.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so I have a question I always ask before I ask that question, I have one last question. For everyone who's listening right now and who's not journaling and who maybe have difficulties to start, what would you say is like one first step you can do to really get into journaling?
I would say the simplest way to get into journaling is just getting in the habit of writing down your thoughts in like short form. That's it. Like if you have an idea or if you have something that you need to do, just write it down, one sentence, that's it. I feel like a lot of times people hear journaling and they see these gigantic books where people spend like hours, you know, perfect handwriting or art skills creating these masterpieces, or they feel like they everything they need to write down needs to be brilliant or profound. And I feel like all those things are nonsense, right? I feel the first thing about journaling is just starting to declutter your mind. Because something really interesting happens when you take something out of your brain and put it on paper. It's like the first time you have to articulate something that might just be a feeling or like a very vague notion. But when you all of a sudden put it into words, like a lot can transform in there. So I would say if people want to get into journaling, just start simply by writing down your thoughts in whatever shape they take. Because very interesting things can happen when you start being able to see see what you're thinking, but also to have your thoughts static for a moment.
Yeah.
Like we have busy lives and we have a lot of racing thoughts, and the idea is like, okay, it's out on paper. That can be very cathartic and therapeutic process.
Definitely. I also think that sometimes our thoughts, we have a thought of fear, but we don't think it to the end. And if you write it down, you're forced to think it to the end, and then suddenly you see, well, that's actually not that scary at all. So sometimes our brain or our mind is we can trick like our own mind, I think, when we write things down, because then we're really forced to think it to the end. And as you said, to articulate it, so valuable. Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite lines is you write in order to learn how to think. And I think that's really true.
Ah, that's so good. That's so good. I always have like final questions I ask each of my guests. And the first one is, what are you most grateful for at the moment?
This entire bullet journal experience has been kind of overwhelming, you know, and I just came back from an international book tour where I got to meet my community for the first time, and the experience of having the privilege of being able to do that and then the ability to meet all these people, I couldn't be more grateful for that. You know, that's a really rare thing. It was really beautiful.
That's nice. Yeah, I can imagine that must be really beautiful. And I think so many people are so grateful that you developed that method, because it probably helps so many people to get clear on what they want and their mind just structured, sort of. Yeah. And the second question I have is, imagine you are 100 years old and there has been a technical problem and everything is deleted. Like your website is deleted, your book doesn't exist anymore, like nothing is left. And I would come to you and I would say, really sorry, writer, but there is nothing left. But what I have is a pen and a paper. And if you could write down on this paper your three most important wisdoms that you would like to pass on to everyone else in this world, if nothing else from you else would exist, so what would you write down? What would be your three wisdoms to share with the world?
Oh, wow. Okay. I would have to go to the lines that have helped me a lot. I would say that pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. Things can seem real, but they're not true. You know, I think a lot of times it's related. We worry about all these things that end up never happening, right? And I would say be the creator of energy and not the destroyer of it.
That's amazing. I love that. So powerful. Thank you. Amazing. And the last question is there a book you would recommend? I mean, of course, your own book, I recommend that. The Bullet Journal Method. I will, of course, put it all in the show notes, the links. But is there another book that maybe changed your life or that really inspired you?
Ooh, there's so many. It's hard to reduce it. I would say that a really pivotal book for me was the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying.
That's a big book.
That was a rare. It is. It's a big book, but it introduced me to a lot of things that I had never thought about before. But you know, it's one of so many wonderful books out there. But I would say that met me at the youngest age. So I think that left a huge impression because I just wasn't aware of anything. Like that book sent me into my education, and everything after that was more familiar because of this book. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. I like that. And it's nice because never anyone else before recommended that book. So I'm happy to have a new good book recommendation here on the podcast. Awesome.
Well, that one, and I would say that the Man's Search for Meaning.
Ah, yeah, Viktor Frankl.
Yep.
Yeah, that's amazing. That also changed a lot in my life. Thank you for sharing. And Ryder, I mean, there are so many people listening right now. How can they connect with you? If they say, I want to learn more about the bullet journal method, I want to know more about Ryder, how can they get in contact with you? How can they find you? How can they learn more about your method?
Bulletjournal.com. That's everything that you need to know. We're at Bullet Journal on most social networks. Awesome. For those that are curious, I think that would be a good place to start.
Cool. Well, I put that all in the show notes. And Thank you so much for your time. It was super inspiring. I learned so many things, and I'm now really excited to journal. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for being so, let's say, brave and courageous, and that you found like your own way through the pain you had. And I think it's so inspiring for so many people listening right now, and to just understand that you yourself are the creator of your experience, and that you don't have to be the victim of whatever anyone says that you can't do. So that was very, very inspiring and powerful. So thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dass du ganz viel für dich mitnehmen konntest, dass du dich inspiriert fühlst, auch anzufangen, falls du es nicht schon machst, Tagebuch zu schreiben, Notizbuch zu schreiben und ja, einfach mal auszuprobieren, wie das für dich funktioniert. Und du wirst feststellen, nach einer relativ kurzen Zeit, dass es wahnsinnig gut tut, die Gedanken aufzuschreiben, aus dem Kopf zu holen und auf Papier zu bringen. Und ja, ich freue mich wie immer über deine Gedanken bei mir auf Instagram @LauraMarlinaSeiler, wenn du vorbeikommst und mir einfach deine Gedanken da lässt, wie dir die Folge gefallen hat, was du für dich mitgenommen hast, was für dich das Wertvollste aus diesem Gespräch gewesen ist und wir uns da austauschen können. Und natürlich freue ich mich auch sehr, wenn du mir hier auf iTunes eine Bewertung da lässt, ein bisschen schreibst, wie dir der Podcast gefällt, was du vielleicht auch insgesamt für dich aus dem Podcast mitnehmen konntest. Und es gibt auch ein Fragenformular zum Podcast. Das heißt, wenn du für dieses neue Jahr Fragen hast, die du möchtest, dass ich sie beantworte, Themenwünsche hast, dann kannst du die einfach stellen. Und zwar kannst du das über meine Webseite machen. Da gibt es einen Link unter Podcast, deine Frage an mich. Und genau, da kannst du mir die einfach schreiben. Und dann kann es sein, dass ich im Laufe des Jahres einfach deine Frage beantworten werde, wo ich mich schon sehr darauf freue. Genau. Und ansonsten haben wir jetzt im Januar gestartet mit der Rise Up and Shine Uni und es ist jetzt schon so inspirierend und eine unfassbare Energie. Und ich bin super dankbar, das jetzt gerade machen zu dürfen mit so vielen Menschen. Und falls du nicht dabei sein solltest, du kannst dich jetzt auf die Warteliste eintragen und bekommst Bescheid, sobald die Rise Up and Shine Uni wieder startet. Und im Higher Self Home, das ist ja unser monatlicher Mitgliederbereich, geht es in diesem Monat um das Thema Frieden, innerer Frieden und Gelassenheit. Und wenn du das Bedürfnis hast, sehr gelassen und friedvoll in dieses Jahr zu starten, dann komm ins Higher Self Home. Und du hast im Higher Self Home auch jetzt Zugriff auf alle Inhalte aus all den vorherigen Monaten. Wir haben da unter anderem über Selbstvertrauen gesprochen, über Selbstliebe, über Liebe generell, über Intuition, über die eigene Wahrheit sprechen. Ganz viele wundervolle Themen, wo du immer eine Meditation bekommst, eine Livestream-Session, ein wundervolles PDF zum Download und ganz viele andere tolle Sachen, um einfach ja kontinuierlich an dir selber zu arbeiten. Den Link findest du auch in den Shownotes. Und ja, das war es jetzt aber erstmal von meiner Seite. Ich wünsche dir jetzt einen gigantischen, tollen Start in dieses neue Jahr. Ich hoffe, es geht dir gut und dass du in deine Kraft kommst, dass du dich selber wertschätzt, dass du dieses Leben wertschätzt und dass du genau das machst, wofür du hier bist und glücklich bist und es dir gut gehen lässt. Und ich schicke dir eine riesige Herzensumarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.